Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of the Wave Break podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo, the growth marketing platform most recommended by other business leaders. Listen, in uncertain times, you need to be supporting your community and growing relationships with your customers. It's going to be appreciated. It's going to be remembered. It's going to be shared. And in good times and bad, this type of communication that's open and empathetic with your customers is key. This is a key theme that we've been talking about at Wavebreak. I've been preaching this on the podcast. And when you're communicating with your customers in this way, the best way to do this is with email. It is and always will be one of the best channels for delivering communication like this. And what I love about Klaviyo is that email is one of its core offerings. And their personalization that you can do inside Klaviyo is just, it can't be beat. And when you leverage that personalization driven by a 360 degree view of the customer, these emails are going to feel more relevant and they're going to drive even stronger relationships. And Klaviyo gets it. They're not just, you know, some company. They understand how challenging it is right now for every entrepreneur. You know, it was hard to get your business off the ground, and navigating these times is even harder. And if you're feeling overwhelmed with growing your business, know that you're not alone. Klaviyo is here to help you build relationships across any distance for your brand and create memorable and meaningful email marketing moments that last a lifetime. And that's how you build a successful e-commerce brand. And this is why I love Klaviyo so much, because they're on the same page with me and Wavebreak. Is like, we're not just about making more revenue. That's great. But what this is really about is an opportunity to create an amazing community with your customers. And the best way to do it is with email. And if you're not on Klaviyo, you gotta get on Klaviyo. Visit klaviyo.com to schedule a free trial. That's KLAVIYO.com. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Wavebreak podcast, the marketing podcast for high growth D2C, retail, and e-commerce brands, where you learn what's working in e-commerce marketing with interviews from the fastest growing brands. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, founder and CEO at Wavebreak, a leading email and CRM agency specializing in high-growth direct-to-consumer brands. You'll learn more about partnering with us at wavebreak.com. Today on the show, I'm joined by Michael Weider, co-founder, president, and CMO at Lalo. We cover everything from product seeding with celebrities to growing the brand while selling out of inventory, team management, and everything in between. So without further ado, let's get into this episode. Michael, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, excited to be here.
Yeah. Before we dive into marketing nitty gritty, a lot of things have changed over the last year and, you know, e-commerce is always evolving. But before we dive into that, give us the brief overview. What's Lalo and how'd you get into this?
Yeah. So Lalo, we make baby and toddler products that parents are proud to own with a focus on products in the home. So how can we make your home look better and also deliver products with less trade-offs? So while they look better, they don't necessarily cost an arm and a leg, but they also deliver on all of the safety and functionality that you'd expect out of the products for your little one. And with our best-selling high chair, you know, a lot of our products are also built to last longer. So they're not just there for a small, minute period of time, but they last through multiple milestones and memories.
That's awesome. And then how did you get into this? What's your background? Do you have a background in creating family products?
I don't. My background is not in consumer goods or physical products or engineering. And my background is really in business building, brand building, entrepreneurship. So, and has been all over the place. Started my career in sports and entertainment. My first business I started was in college as a music manager and event producer, and then moved in to the sports world as a sports agent, created a company from there in the fitness tech world. Followed that up with a stint at a high growth tech startup where I met my co-founder for Lalo, Greg. Worked there for 3 years in the HR tech world before joining forces with Greg and starting Lalo. And at that stage in our life, my wife and I were trying for our first, and you know, Greg was just getting married, and we were all seeing our friends and family go through the process of having kids and shopping for this stuff, and we're like, this is crazy. No one shops for any of. For this stuff. No one shops for anything like the way they shop for baby products. This has to be changed. There must be a business here. And we dove in.
Yeah. And were you looking initially like, oh, it's the way people are buying that we want to change? Or was it more to like the product just like hadn't really evolved much? It didn't have the aesthetic that you were looking for? Or like, what was the initial
thought behind that?
Yeah, we definitely didn't start with the product. We started with the connection between the customer and the brands. Well, it felt, you know, this was 2017. The idea was germinated and, you know, a year and a half, almost 2 years later, the brand launched in 2019. But what we saw was that there were these legacy players that were, you know, 100% sold through wholesale. They didn't know who their customers were. They weren't connecting with them directly. The conversation, the understanding of what they were going through wasn't really there. And a lot of brands were just marketing through perpetuating this fear and anxiety of being a parent. Your kid isn't going to sleep if you don't buy this product. They're not going to eat if you don't buy this product. You know, you won't put on diaper cream right unless you buy this thing. It's like, that's not really true. First of all, like, every parent goes through the same things for the most part, you know, in unique ways. And we felt it would be a lot more successful to market through love and harness the excitement of milestones that every parent goes through with their kid, and then wrap products around that that are there for them in those moments, and a brand that is really there for parents in those moments.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. And then just for context for listeners who aren't aware, the Hero product was like the initial high chair, I guess you could call it.
Yeah, so our high chair has become our bestseller and what we've really been known for. But as we've, you know, begun to expand our line within the home, you know, we have a ton of products that we're working on and new things coming and launching later this year and beyond that will take us throughout the home. We strive to be the most predominant brand that you find in a family's home.
And you're CMO. So like, thinking about growth and like how, you know, marketing's evolved and e-commerce has evolved since you started the brand, like, it's changed a lot. And like, in thinking about product, since we're on that, like, do you think about that in terms of growth strategy too? Like, you started with the chair, and then how do you think about product through a lens of growth?
Yeah, we think of product a lot. Product is probably the start of everything in terms of creating moments for us to speak to our customer. Product is an opportunity for us to continue to show up in our customers' lives. So we think a lot about how do we, you know, space our launches and create launches for different parts of our customer base. We have a really unique thing about our customer base is that it's ever replenishing, right? People are always having kids, whether or not that's the same person. So, you know, yes, you know, we have repeat. That's really important to us, and retention as we launch new products. What can our existing customers buy? But every day there's a new cohort of parents that's having their first child. And how do we create this cachet around our brand that Lala is the brand you need to have if you're having a kid? So, you know, the parents that are ahead of you, one stage ahead of you, recommending to the parents behind them. Because that's the natural consumer behavior within our space, is it really starts with word of mouth. In a lot of other spaces, word of mouth is used as a validator. And for sure, it's used as a validator in our space, but it's really used all the way up front. Before you even know what that product is, you're asking your friends what products you need.
Yeah, and that's a really great point. I feel like word of mouth is like really underestimated, because for most brands, it doesn't work the same. But like you said, you're thinking about how people are already buying and what the process is. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Although it's like difficult to do tactically too, because you also have to be patient. It's a bit of a different play than just like, hey, you know, let's squeeze the Facebook ads. How do you do that? Like, how do you set it up so that you are the brand that, you know, people are finding out about through their friends, through word of mouth from those previous parents?
Well, I think one thing that digital marketers in particular forget about is the psychology part of marketing, right? And really, really getting into your consumer's head. So I think if you start by thinking about your consumer journey, about pages that people are landing on, you've already gone down a wrong path. Put yourself in your shoes and say, how does this person shop for this stuff, right? Where are they going to turn to? What are they going to research? What terms are they going to go to in Google? Where are they going to show up in person to learn about it? Who are they going to ask about it? So if you think about all those paths within the journey and then map that to a digital experience, you end up, you can be a lot stronger. You can have your copy, your creative, everything could be stronger if you really put yourself into like a real practical use case of how your customer shops and not just how they click through the internet.
Yeah. And like, when you think of that, was that part of the initial strategy is like, okay, people are Googling probably every question they don't know the answer to. So like, let's be there, or let's advertise against it. Or how are you thinking about that? Like the more direct response side.
It's part of it. Our business isn't very direct response because there's a lot, there's a pretty long tail research cycle, and there's a consideration cycle, and there's gifting, and there's a lot of like interesting components that
every direct response marketer listening to this is like, what, how?
Yeah. And look, that's not to say there's no direct response. Every
right.
Like there's always an opportunity for that depending on the product line, but there's a, you know, our business is highly, highly unique. And I urge every marketer to always think about what's right for your business, not just follow a playbook. So for us, it's, yeah, did we think about it up front? We did. We've also learned a ton along the way, right? What's going to work? What's going to resonate? How can we make this best? And then there's kind of a snowball effect to it all, because the more product you have in market, the more you can learn and shift and adapt to what's work, to what you're seeing, right? And not just what you're hypothesizing. So sometimes that shows up in the data. It's really important to look at the data, right? But it also might show up anecdotally. And you have to connect all the dots. It's not just about looking at whatever attribution tool you're using or Google Analytics. It's also about connecting all of the dots between your CX conversations and what you're seeing on social or a post-purchase survey, and really trying to write this holistic story about what's going on in the consumer's mind, and not just saying, yep, GA is telling us that. That's what it is. Let's keep going down on that.
Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense. Like, thinking about why and how people buy. How do you then tactically go out and then drive growth? Because it's like, oh, that's great. Like, yeah, let's position ourselves as like the leading brand in this category. And then let's optimize to be everywhere where people are already looking for this. And then like, how do you tactically then start to execute on that?
Yeah, for us, I mean, it's a lot about, it's about PR, it's about affiliate, it's about influencer. Product seeding is a massive undertaking that we've really been serious about from the beginning, is how do we get celebrities and influencers to really love our brand and not just push our product, right? So if they're shopping our brand, when we make contact with them, they've already fallen in love and they want it, that's great, right? Then from there, all we have to do is make sure we get the product in their hands, and they're going to go and post, you know, 90% of the time.
Yeah.
So for us, you know, it's, we talk a lot about influencers, and you know, we have a saying at Lalo, or I have a saying, that influencers are not a marketing channel. They're people. So you treat them like people, you get results. If you add a little piece of humanity to it, and you don't just start off by telling them what they should write or what features they need or sending them a link, and you start with, how's your child? What stage are you in? What do you need? It's a little bit easier to create connection between you and the influencer or celebrity than just that transaction. Then if you need to shift it to a transactional point, if you need to get them an affiliate link, or you want to, you know, get them to promote something, it becomes a little easier because you're just asking a friend to do it for you.
And now a quick break for a word from our sponsor, Okendo. Okendo is the new standard in customer reviews for high growth Shopify brands. We use them with our clients, and they work with over 5,500 of the fastest growing Shopify retailers like Skims, Nomad, and Buck Mason to help them leverage their most powerful asset, their customers. Okendo gives brands all the tools they need to capture and showcase customer-generated content like product reviews and ratings, photos and videos, and Q&A. Plus, they have an awesome integration with Klaviyo that makes it easy to do cool stuff like send review request emails and target shoppers based on review content. With super affordable monthly subscriptions starting at $29 a month, it's really a no-brainer to me. Visit okendo.io to learn more today. That's okendo.io, Okendo. Thanks, Okendo, for sponsoring the show.
Yeah, and that makes so much sense. And then you get so much more leverage from it too, because you're not just like, you know, buying these Instagram posts or stories or whatever that are going to fade away into the algorithm or literally just disappear once they're over, but also like becoming the default of like, yeah, the Lalo chair is just like what X, Y, and Z person has. And like, that's what I'm going to get too, because, you know, they have great taste. Yeah. And then how does that work? Like, it's still a manual process, or how do you think about that? And like, are you guys tracking spreadsheets? Like, oh my goodness, so-and-so is pregnant, or like, what, yeah. What does that look like?
We monitor it. Our PR team monitors it. We are, you know, reviewing potential seeding outreach every month, but we also are getting a ton of inbound, you know, every time,
oh, wow.
You know, every time an influencer celebrity posts, that also snowballs into more inquiries coming into our DMs and whatnot. I mean, we've had celebrities with tens of millions of followers DM us asking for product or because they purchased product. I mean, we have a lot of celebrities that are just customers. They go in and swipe their credit card because they don't want to be bothered, you know, just dealing with the brand.
Yeah. And those people who go in and ask for it for free, like, what are they like, hey, I'll post in it for exchange, or it depends on the follower count. They're like, hey, I'm so-and-so, or they don't even say that. They're just, hey, love your chair. Here's my address.
No, I mean, we get the influencers who say I'll do something exchange usually have less than 10,000 followers.
Got it. Okay.
Because they're trying to barter, right? Like that's like,
right.
This is like, you know, colonial times on the internet. They're their posts for in exchange for product, and that's great. And those, you know, those people do, you know, certain ones of them offer value. You know, there are a lot of people who think there are influencers that, you know, we have to turn down lightly, and you know, want to keep them as brand fans, and that's really important because you know every parent should be a fan of Lalo, regardless of it.
How do you do that in a culture of like screenshot to the story and like can't believe Lalo said that?
Oh, I mean, it's, you know, our team is super careful about this, and they're, we thank them for their interest. We're so glad they're fans of the brand, and, you know, occasionally we'll give them a thank you for reaching out offer. That looks very similar to a welcome offer that any customer can get on our site. But, you know, we engage with them, and, you know, people want to see the engagement, especially in social. So, you know, a lot of those people, if they go on a purchase, we're engaging with their posts. They're usually tagging us. They, you know, they're trying to build themselves up. So, you know, we're happy to support them. Even if that doesn't mean we can send them free product. We can't, you know, as a brand, not every, you know, no brand can afford to send everybody who reaches out free product.
Yeah. And then are you still doing a lot of outbound today also, like to the right people? I guess you kind of already mentioned that with like the seed list, but it's also,
yeah,
you're getting a lot of inbound.
We do. We work very closely with our PR firm on that. And we're really, really thoughtful about who it is and how we go out. We're not doing outbound, you know, saying, do you want to post for us? We're going outbound saying, hey, like, so exciting. You have a 3-month-old. You must be getting ready to start solids. Do you have a high chair yet? We'd love to send you one. And usually the answer is, of course, we'd love it.
And then where's it go from there? Like once they love it, you're like, hey, we'd love for you to do a post, or like, how do you then turn it into like marketing content, or do you not even worry about that?
We don't even worry about it. We don't even worry about it. I think the key is not to worry about it. I mean, I spent, you know, a good portion of my early career working with talent, and talent, they don't want to be treated transactionally, you know, unless they're getting paid, and then it becomes a business relationship and it needs to be done that way. But they, you know, they want to live their life. They want to be left alone. And if you take care of them, you know, we've had, you know, celebrities who their family, they have our product and their entire family came down with COVID. We send them, you know, some get better meals and things just to stay in their life, stay them, you know, top of mind to them. It's not just about our product, but can we take care of them as our friends and, you know, our Lalo fam, as we call them, you know, because we care about them and their family, and in return, creating that relationship pays dividends.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, it's very, especially nowadays, right? People are getting hit up left and right, even influencers with large followings by brands. And it's not sincere. It's a marketing department just trying to, you know, hit their numbers of X quota per month or whatever. But yeah, no, I like how everything, the way you think about marketing, everything comes down to like actual human beings on the other side of the screen, whether it's like, you know, responding to an influencer that's not going to get a deal to, you know, even thinking about like marketing strategy holistically, like, where are people actually in their life going to go look for us? How are you thinking about that as like marketing has evolved for a digital brand over the last few years?
Yeah, I think there's a couple pieces to it. One is talking to your customer as much as you can. So we do that, you know, through CX every day, but we also have a customer council, right? So if we can get to understand what our customer looks like, who's within those cohorts of people, we can create enough messaging content and, you know, advertising that will relate to people on a human level. We also just believe in doing the right thing as much as possible, whether that's just showing up that we're, you know, letting people know we're there and we're there for them. So, you know, I'll never forget our most successful SMS campaign was kind of like, I think like 2 Mondays into the official lockdown of COVID. And we just sent a, hey, how you doing text. That's all the text said to all of our tech subscribers. And we got like real responses. Like we were their friend, like, oh, I'm struggling or we need this. And that kind of crafted some different resources that we put out. We created what we called at the time, the tot line, which was, you know, a texting hotline that you can, you know, type in, you know, put in different questions and we'll get back to you with real life answers. We also then had takeovers where experts would come on to the tot line. And during that time you can text, you know, whether it was an educator to get tips or a feeding specialist or developmental psychologist, just ask questions, you know, and just different moments when it's just the right thing to do, and not show up because it's a brand, you know, it's a branded thing. Like, you know, the school shooting in Uvalde that happened recently, like it was a meeting where 80% parents, everybody felt that to their core. And we knew our customers were feeling it to their core as well. So what could we do? Oh, let's donate money, a percentage of sales, and put our money where our mouths are. Let's match employee donations and let's not go talk about it publicly. Let's just do it. I know I'm talking about publicly now, so it's a little ironic, but it,
nobody else knows.
Yeah. It was just the right thing to do, right? Like, we knew we needed to do that as an organization. Like, organizations, companies have a right and a responsibility to act with integrity. And that means doing the right thing. We have 5 company values. The 5th is be a good person. We believe everything starts with that. And, you know, we take that value very, very seriously with all of our employees and who, you know, and who we hire and how we act as an organization. And we think of an organization as a person. We have to be good people, and it has to start there.
Yeah. And that's the hardest thing to do is build a great team. How have you, like, what's the team size today? And how have you thought about building the team as the brand has grown?
Yeah, we've tripled. We were really, really small team, about 5 or 6 people through then, big, you know, pretty much the end of last year. We've tripled to add a lot of core players as we've grown to make sure we can scale and support our customers and our product, you know, product roadmap appropriately. We have a fantastic team. We have, you know, 80% or so parents on the team. So we understand our customer really to its core because we are the customer. Every one of the parents on the team has, I think the oldest kid is like 6. So everybody has young kids. So we can really, really relate. We're completely distributed. So when we started the company, we always had remote employees and freelancers that work for the company, but with a home base in New York, because that's where Greg and I are from. We still to this day have an office in Brooklyn where I am today. It's completely optional for our employees to come in, try to create a great balance, especially with so many working parents on the team.
But, are most people remote, or do you have like a healthy mix that come into the office too?
We have a few that come in regularly, but we have, I think 2/3 of the team is completely remote, meaning outside New York City area. Really over Colorado, California, Indiana, Pennsylvania. We're all over, which also leads to giving us really good perspective of different types of customers all over the country, right? It reminds us that not every parenting situation or family situation or living situation is identical.
Yeah, definitely. And then how do you keep everybody aligned and like on the same page and moving forward? I'm sure it was a lot easier when it was just like 5 to 6 people. Definitely, you know, when more people are in the office than not. So like, what does that look like in terms of, you know, making sure everyone's on the same page as the team has tripled, the business is growing, you know, and then at the same time, like the pace of e-commerce is getting quicker and quicker and things are changing so quickly. How do you do that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we do a few different things. Number one, you know, we force ourselves to get together online, team meetings, things like that. We really try to create good systems, and we rely on the team to create the systems for themselves, right? Communicate and operate and collaborate the ways that work for you. So that's really important. And we don't create one system for the whole team. There are structures that do help put that in place. I think we do try to get in person when possible. So, you know, flying places and bring people together now that, you know, people feel safe doing so again is really important. The team that's in New York, we try to get together occasionally, and we try to have fun in virtual ways too. We have a lot of cooks on our team. So we've done a few like virtual cooking classes together as a team, but just, we also are really respectful. And I think, you know, that 80% working parents is really unique, and it allows ourselves to our team to create boundaries and also have an understanding, right? An understanding that team members might be shutting off because it's bath time or dinner time. They may be on later. They may not be on later. But we are all going through very similar things. So there is a mutual respect and understanding.
Yeah, that's great. And then at the same time, it's like, you know, even on the marketing, the content side, like, you know, what's going to pop because the whole team is dealing with the same time crunch, the same bath time at this time and all that. That's like all my friends now. They're like, oh, got to go. Like, it's bath time. And then, you know, call drops. But No, and that makes a ton of sense. And how are you thinking about, you mentioned that you're bringing a lot of new products to market. How do you think about product launches from like a tactical launch perspective? I know we talked about how they play into your growth strategy and how you want to be in every family home and be that go-to brand. How do you think about that as you continue to add new products? Like, how do you make sure your existing customers hear about it, get it out there and all that?
Yeah, I mean, segmentation is really important, right? And messaging is really important to each segment. What does each customer or prospect need to know about the launch that can either lead to them purchasing or lead to them spreading the word? We know that, you know, some of our launches, our customers may have grown out of that life stage, but that's okay, right? Can we get that level of excitement within that customer that says, oh, I wish they had this when I was in that age, you know, when my kid was that age? That's a great feeling for us because they will start to spread the word. If they love our other products, they'll start to spread that word.
And now a quick break for a word from our sponsor, Recharge. The subscription market is predicted to grow to nearly $500 billion by 2025. As a fast-growing area in commerce, subscriptions hold tremendous opportunities to build a community of customers who share your values. Recharge is the leading subscription management solution, helping e-commerce merchants of all sizes launch and scale subscription offerings. Recharge powers the growth of over 15,000 subscription merchants and their communities, turning one-time transactions into long-term customer relationships. Whether you're a direct-to-consumer business or an omnichannel brand, subscriptions strengthen your brand's relationship with your customers and make it easy for consumers to make repeat purchases. With subscriptions, merchants are able to experience predictable revenue, increased customer loyalty, and higher average order values. Turn transactions into relationships and experience seamless subscription commerce with Recharge. Get started today with the subscription payment solution trusted by over 50 million subscribers worldwide by heading over to rechargepayments.com/e-commerce leaders. And now back to the show.
That's awesome. So it's like, once again, it's less of a direct response strategy and more of like, hey, let's make a really great product and then let's share what it is. Pretty much.
And some of our products, they take time to mature in market. It's not like we're rolling out a new color of a t-shirt or a new shade of lipstick or a new style of sneaker. We're sometimes launching things that you don't need for 6 months. So we need to take, you know, every launch to be specific and think about what does it mean to our customer.
Yeah, for sure. Like you mentioned launching colors. Is that something that you do as well as part of growth or more so like launching brand new products?
Yeah, we launch new colors all the time. Last year we launched our color sage, which we launched limited edition. It sold out so fast. I think it was like within 24 hours that it sold out. And it was clear we needed to bring it back. So we brought it back and it's become our number two, you know, sometimes even our number one seller on some days, but our number two seller month in, month out. And we turn to our customers for that. What colors do you want to see? You know, we obviously look at trends too, but we rely heavily on our customers to kind of drive when we come out with new colors as well.
That makes a ton of sense. And then I'm sure like other brands, like, you know, supply chain, it's getting tricky. As CMO, how do you balance growth and supply chain these days too?
Yeah. I mean, it the good thing is I oversee product too. So,
Sweet. I think that's the right way to do it too. It's like product is marketing these days. And I think like people don't realize that. It's not just like throwing up ads and scale on it. Like great product will drive the word of mouth that you're talking about too.
Totally. I mean, we have great leaders on the product side as well, but you know, in terms of how my co-founder and I delineate our responsibilities, me as president and CMO, I oversee most of the public facing things, including physical products. So, you know, I'm acutely aware of our lead times and how we, you know, need to plan ahead. But it's hard, especially if you're trying to launch with product stateside and you're not making the US, like you need to plan ahead. You need to be thinking through, you need to be getting samples over for photography. You need to have a 3D renderer. You need to do different things to stay ahead of schedule and seating and, you know, impress. It's important to have samples over here. So you need to balance it all and you need to create budget to be able to do it.
And so are you thinking like, oh, double timelines now, like we're ordering twice as much inventory, so it extends out, or we're ordering like 2 months in advance of when we used to, or like, what does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, that is, you know, planning is the most important function. as you're scaling your business, when you're early on and you're ordering minimum order quantities and you're just like, you know, going order by order to get inventory and you're selling out all the time, that's tough. But as your business matures and you scale, planning is the most important function to add. How can you understand demand and how can you have enough inventory and supply of your best selling SKUs, right? You might, as if you're, you know, cash constrained or you need to be making, you know, critical decisions of what, where to invest in inventory, you need to make sure you have your best selling SKUs in stock. You know, you see a lot of back in stock, this thing is out of stock, ads going on. That's stupid, honestly. Like it costs way more to be out of stock than to be in stock with a little extra inventory, as long as you have the cash, right? And you, that is a huge, huge, huge disclaimer, is you have to have the ability to afford the extra inventory, but it's way more expensive to be out of stock than to hold extra inventory of your best selling SKUs. So if you're going to take lower risk and you're not going to buy into everything, do it on your lower, you know, things that sell at a lower velocity, things that sell at a higher velocity, invest in that inventory.
Yeah. And that is something that, like you said, like, I mean, it's just like very common today. You see people just like selling out a product and like you could order something and then not even know until you check out that, like you get the email like, hey, by the way, this is 4 to 6 weeks back order. And you mentioned the cost. I mean, did you guys ever sell out of the bestseller early on and then have, and not
all the time, all the time. And partly you, it's really hard to predict growth when you're in a high growth phase and you're growing like faster than you would have imagined. It didn't matter how much planning you did. You just right. outgrew it. And you could order to a certain amount because if, especially if you have products that are more expensive to make like ours, like you have to make decisions about where to invest your money. And you also need money to invest in growth. So how do you invest in growth and inventory is a really, really tough balance for any early stage company.
And so how did you think about that? Did you go out and raise money or like, even with that, was it difficult to like do the equation? Is it just kind of like for a period, you just tough it out and then, you know, you get to a point where you can breathe a little bit, or how did you balance that?
Yeah, we did raise money. We raised a seed round in 2021 and a little bit of money before that that helped power the growth and make sure we had the right ammunition to go out and do what we needed to do.
And then in terms of like getting the numbers and the supply chain and inventory and all that dialed these days, now that you're like, we have to be a lot more specific with the numbers, what did that process look like? Is that like building out a team in-house that's managing that? Is it like implementing an ERP or something like that? Or like, how did you go from the point from like hyper growth of like, hey, let's just, you know, keep everything going up and to the right to like, okay, we need to get serious about our numbers?
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, we identified a freelancer that was able to help us on the side of his full-time job. You know, that was our first introduction to it. And some of it was like, you know, common sense, like us just crunching numbers, looking at, you know, if you're decent in an Excel spreadsheet and, you know, math, you can do some, you know, lightweight planning, right? You have to make some prediction around what you're going to sell and the growth rate. But then, you know, first introduction to real planning was through a freelancer. And then, you know, earlier this year, we brought on, you know, full-time person to lead that function.
Got it. And that freelancer, were you looking for somebody brand side who had a few extra hours to moonlight and then like leveraging their expertise, or is that how you went about it?
Yeah. I mean, I would say we were the benefit of our brand at that time was we were very, our SKU catalog, it was light, right? Only a few SKUs to manage. But if you're an apparel brand with dozens and dozens of SKUs, it's got to be built in probably earlier than we had it built in.
And when you think about that, is that in terms of like team size or revenue or SKU count, or how do you think about that?
Revenue, SKU count. Yeah. In terms of when I would bring it, you know, if you have a large catalog, I would prioritize it early.
Got it. And then just like, as we start to, you know, wrap up here, like, how are you thinking about the future of the brand? Like you're getting to that point where it's like the brand's been around for a few years. You're really starting to hit your stride, roll out all those new products. How are you thinking about the future of Lalo?
The future for Lalo is pretty crazy, I think. If I look into the future, into my crystal ball, I see a lot more products. I see more retail stores. I see a bigger but not humongous team of amazing people. And I see more families and smiling babies and probably some crying babies too, because that's natural. We like to be real. But we see lots of families just thriving, you know, and interacting with our brand and our products and just, you know, showing up in any way we can for them.
Is there any strategy to the new products that you launch? Like, oh, we're launching for this reason, or is it just like, you know, this feels right intuitively that this is the next product, their customers are asking for it. Or how do you think of that? Cause I know like there can be some, you know, brands can get overwhelmed with like all the different things and you can only do and focus on so much. So how do you think about that?
Yeah, so we do. We try to balance like early stage registry gifting products and later stage toddler products that our customers can grow into.
Sweet. Anything else, or you know, just words or thoughts or advice to end on?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, one thing we talk about, one of our other company values is write your own playbook. And it's the most important thing, I think, for any digital marketer, because if you're active on Twitter or you're in the sphere, you're going to be distracted by some playbook that looks like it's the only way to do things. And it's absolutely not. All of those things that are floating around should absolutely be listened to and thought about. But the key is to think about it. Is it right for your business? How does it apply to your business? And do I need to adapt it? Because not everything that's floating around is right for your business, not right for my business. But there's ways for collaboration and learning from what other people are doing too. It's just important to adapt it for what's right for you.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, it's so easy to get that FOMO from that Twitter thread that's just like, oh, we should have been, we need to be doing this 6 months ago. But then it's funny. It's like, you'll look under the hood and like your brand will be performing at an even better level compared, you know, in some other category or something there. It's like people are always chasing that like silver bullet when, you know, a lot of times they're sitting on gold themselves. And I think that's so true. You know, I think you learn a lot, even from this podcast, right? Like you can learn a lot about, oh yeah, expanding product line or growing and building the team. But at the same time, it's like, what products should you add next? Or like, what team member do you really need? Because if you don't need an operations person, you probably shouldn't hire one right now. If you need, you know, a head of CX because you've grown into that, that's probably a better hire. So yeah, I totally agree with that. So yeah, where can we go to learn more about you and Lalo?
Yeah, absolutely. So to learn about Lalo, definitely follow us on Instagram at Lalo, L-A-L-O. And online, our website is meetlalo.com. meetlalo.com. And if you're in New York, definitely swing by our store located at Zero Bond on the corner of Bond and Broadway. And then if you want to follow along with anything that I have to say about marketing, golf, anything, follow me on Twitter at mweeder, M-W-I-E-D-E-R.
Nice. Sounds good. We'll link it all up down in the show notes below. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Dylan.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. If you're not subscribed on iTunes or Spotify, go hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you're not on our email list, go sign up at wavebreak.co/join. You'll join other e-commerce leaders at brands like Skims, Cartier, and Walmart, and thousands more, learning exactly what's working in e-commerce right now. You won't want to miss it. Sign up at wavebreak.co/join. It's free. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. I hope you have a wonderful day.